Hello and welcome to the College Football Experience Podcast. My name is David Capel. I'm joined by Kent Brown. And Kent, let's jump into what happened to be a busy week last week. And let's start with Purdue, the top five team killer is what we'll call them. They got Ohio State this weekend.
Yeah, they have another chance to beat a team, and they keep just going away. They beat number two, then they beat number three, now they have number four. So it's just, I don't know if we can add whoever's ranked fifth next week if they somehow beat Ohio State, but I feel like that should be what should get done. This is a Purdue team that we know has a couple high-end top players in George Karlaftis, the DN, and David Bell, the wide receiver. O'Connell's been a lot better at quarterback, but I think it's funny just how Purdue keeps winning these type of games. Now, they did lose to Notre Dame earlier this season, and they have three losses on their schedule. So it's not like Purdue's competing for a playoff, but they're tied for first place in that Big Ten West. And for the Purdue Boilermakers, this is the type of game that they usually step up and play well in. So I would just say if you're Ohio State, especially after a close win over Penn State at home, a close win over Nebraska, you have to watch out. The fact that that's a 20.5-point line, I think, was surprising to me, but Purdue keeps doing it in big games, and they'll have another shot this Saturday.
Yeah, I mean, this feels like a big letdown spot personally, but we'll see what happens there. Let's talk about another top team, and that's Alabama. 6 rushing yards, and LSU in the fourth quarter was 1 or 2 plays away from trying to tie or win that game, and really running out the clock with the chance to win that game. So, you know, what does that say more about LSU, or just, you know, Bama, all, you know, tough competition, you know, it's a rivalry game and they just didn't quite get up for it?
I would say it says more about Alabama in that for Alabama, their line play has not been great this year. It's been the worst it's been in several years. And offensive line wise now against A&M, it wasn't spectacular, and in this game, wasn't spectacular. I mean, only 6 rush yards on 26 rushes. I know sacks are accounted in that, but that still factors into the game plan. Bryce Young had a couple big plays, one to Jamison Williams early in the third quarter and another to John Mechie late in the second quarter. But outside of that little window there where Bama scored 14 quick points, they struggled all game offensively. They had that late turnover that gave LSU a chance to go down and potentially win the game. And if it wasn't for the Bama defense in this game, they would have fell off. I think what this game indicates is that you get Alabama this season, it's not an unbeatable team the way it's been outside of if you're Clemson or Ohio State or maybe an Auburn the last few years. I feel like if Bama gets into the playoff, which would probably mean they'd have to beat Georgia, whoever plays them in the playoff, if they get there, can't feel like it's an overwhelming game that you can't win. Now, right. Of course, the problem is if Bama has trouble moving the ball against an LSU defense who gave up 200-plus rush yards against Kentucky, gave up huge rush yards against other teams this year, how will they be able to move the ball against a Georgia defense that doesn't give up yards against anybody? So that's the bigger question. But for now, I think Alabama fans, you have to be happy you won the game, but you can't be happy about looking at that Georgia matchup right now and thinking you can win that battle up front.
Yeah, no, 100%. It's going to be it shows a little bit of weakness where there typically hasn't been with Alabama. Moving on, let's talk about the Pac-12, where there's a lot of weakness left and right. We're talking about a team in Stanford that just gets blown out, and they're the ones that have probably ruined the most chances for a Pac-12 playoff team by beating Oregon a month and a half ago. But man, 52-7 at home against Utah, that's ugly.
Yeah, and Utah's been playing better. I think with Cameron Rising at quarterback, they've been a competent team. And right now, definitely the favorite to get to the Pac-12 title game out of the South. And they'll have Oregon coming up shortly. But for Stanford, it's just weird to think how far they've fallen because, yeah, you know, we started this podcast and Stanford was a top 10 program. David Shaw was a top 5 coach. He is the highest paid coach in the conference. And yet, you watch them now, they don't have those elite running backs the way they had with Gearhart and Bryce Love and Christian McCaffrey.
Stephen Taylor.
The quarterbacks are lacking, where I don't think Tanner McKee's anything special. Even with Davis Mills, who lately has had a few starts in the NFL, he didn't do anything that stood out during his time at Stanford. And then they're not bringing in those blue chip defensive players that were more academically inclined, like a Solomon Thomas or guys like that. So Stanford has to figure out things. I do think that David Shaw is going to have to just revamp his entire coaching staff in the offseason. That's something that I feel like a lot of coaches who have had success and then they start falling down, a lot of them have the loyalty to their staff, but they can't keep that loyalty long term if that staff is now struggling. So I expect in 2022 for Stanford to look a lot different with the coaching front. But for now, they are definitely one of the worst teams in the Pac-12. And like you said, their only saving grace is the fact that, they showed up, beat Oregon in overtime about a month and a half ago. And outside of that, they've been terrible just about all season.
Yeah, I mean, well, they smoked USC on the road as well, but that's not much of an accomplishment this year. And Ken, I like that little foreshadowing you did. We're going to talk about Dan Mullen and Scott Frost right now. But you said, oh, you got to be loyal to your coaches, and but he might have to make a change. Both of these guys doing the fire everybody, just keep me here for another year move, where Dan Mullen fired multiple assistants after getting smoked by South Carolina, and then Scott Frost had to fire four staff members and had a weird, like, it was easy to do speech about all of it, as long as I can get more time here. It kind of came off weird when I watched it, or when I read it, excuse me. But that's the move right now for both of these guys that are struggling at these big name programs and not producing.
Yeah, I mean, at least as of now, Nebraska has said they will keep Scott Frost for 2022. For Florida, nothing's been decided long term, but I do think it is a step that was needed for Dan Mullen in the meantime. Especially Todd Grantham, the D coordinator, he just hasn't been a good fit there. Even last season when Florida won big, it was their offense that carried them in every game. It was not the defense. Scott Frost, I just don't know. I guess Nebraska thinks we can't definitively get anybody better right now because.
This year, especially this year, with
Right.
LSU, USC, the trickle down that's going to happen. Yeah, you don't want to be going up against those big programs if you're Nebraska this year.
Yeah, and I think that if Scott Frost next year is not winning at least seven, if not eight plus games, that will probably be the end of him. It's now 4 straight years, though, that he won't make a bowl game in Nebraska.
And have a losing record, right?
Right, yeah. And that's just not acceptable at any major program, let alone at a program that had as much a rich history from the 70s up until the early 2000s as any program in the country. So I was a little bit surprised that Scott Frost kept his job, but I at least understand it based on, as you said, the rest of the coaching landscape and what's out there. For Dan Mullen, it's going to be very interesting. I think if he wins out, I'm not going to count the bowl game because who knows who plays in your bowl game. A lot of guys take off. If he just doesn't lose to Florida State and they win their last couple games, I think Dan Mullen might survive. But for now, he's going to have to be very creative with that staff and figure things out. Recruiting is where Florida continues to falter lately, where if you're going to compete with Georgia and you're going to compete with Alabama and A&M, you have to recruit top six, top seven type of classes. And Dan Mullen has been trending down year by year, where at first he was recruiting high classes, and now they're in the teens. They've been in the 20s a couple times. That has to get a lot better. And then, of course, on the flip side now, we have Texas Tech officially made their hire. They brought in Baylor assistant Joey McGuire. He
Yeah,
was a
not as
linebackers
splashy as
coach.
I thought it was going to be. I thought that this was definitely a Sonny Dykes play, but no.
Yeah, well, the thing with this guy is, so I didn't know who he was when he was named, but he's a big time high school coach for a long time in the state of Texas. He knows the region, he knows the recruiting base. He's a very likable guy by all accounts, but he was a position coach. He wasn't a coordinator, he wasn't a head coach on the college level, but they look at him most likely as, can you be kind of that guy that's from Texas that knows the base, that can recruit well? And then I'm assuming the coordinators will come in and be the ones running a lot of day-to-day X's and O's. But yeah, it was an out-of-the-box hire, but it's one that Texas Tech felt good about. And I guess we'll see. I have no idea if it works out or not. And then, of course, the other hire, and you texted me this morning about Jim Mora Jr. appears to be headed to UConn, which, man, if I'm him, I stay in TV and don't even do that job. But clearly,
Paycheck, I guess. I mean, it's weird being the third fiddle at a place behind the basketball coach, the women's basketball coach, and then him.
right? And look, he's been on TV since he was out at UCLA. When I worked at NFL Network, he instantly came there and was doing draft coverage and went to ESPN. He's done a lot of work with them. I like him as a personality. I feel like Jim Mora Jr. is a solid coach. Or I guess he's not technically junior. It was always Jim L. Mora. as they joked about. But I feel like I thought potentially if Jimmy Lake got canned at Washington, that he might have been a candidate there. But clearly, it's another Huskies. It's UConn. The stakes are low there. But that's a hard job to take over, an independent team in football with no local talent base at all, no
Right.
tradition. And as you said, football is not king there by any means. Where it's so rare in college sports, there's very few programs. There's like North Carolina, Duke, Kentucky, Louisville,
Kansas,
Kansas, Indiana potentially, and
USC right
UConn.
now.
And that's about it. Outside of that, there's no other programs where, I mean, even Michigan, who's been better in basketball than football the last decade, it's still a football-heavy school.
What about UCLA? That's one that's really right on the edge.
I guess so, but the fact that their basketball program hasn't done as much in the last decade, even when they were there with Howland, they made the Final Fours a few times. I'll
Four
be
years
going
ago.
tomorrow night, by the way. We're recording this on Thursday. I'm going to go Friday night to the Villanova and UCLA game, a top five matchup. UCLA's in that mix as well, just because basketball has always been more successful than football. But something tells me if football got better, that would matter a lot
Well,
more.
and UCLA pours money into that football program like it's their number one sport.
Right.
They just haven't had the results, but and then I joke, USC right now is a basketball school, making it to the Elite Eight last year,
Yep.
while their football team has fired their coach and has a losing record. But let's jump into the college football poll. Not much changed. Obviously, Michigan State dropped down. The interesting thing about them dropping down is they drop behind Michigan, whose Michigan's last game was a loss to Michigan State, and yet they are now one rank behind them. Michigan 6, Michigan State 7. Doesn't really matter with the games that still have to be played ahead of them, but it is a little bit funny at that how they're weighting losses and wins for Michigan and Michigan State.
Yeah, they've been consistent. If you look at head-to-head and teams that are close, you have Oregon 3, Ohio State 4. You have Baylor 13, BYU 14. You have teams like that where like Purdue 19, Iowa 20. Those are all head-to-heads that they factor in and counted for. And then you have this one. It's 6-7 where Michigan's ahead. And they just played last Saturday, not this past
Right.
Saturday,
It
but they
okay,
just
then Michigan
played.
had a bye, so their last game was a loss to Michigan State.
And then you look at this, though, and you're saying if they're this close, head to head should matter. It's one thing if you feel like Michigan 6th and Michigan State 17th, then head
Right.
to head doesn't really factor in. But as long as teams are ranked near each other, and it will be the same thing that if Cincinnati loses a game and Notre Dame keeps winning, Cincinnati beat them. If they're near each other, then they should be ahead of them. So ultimately, as you said, it won't matter 3 weeks from now or a month from now, because if Michigan State wins out, they win the Big Ten. And they're in the college football playoff. But if Michigan wins out, that becomes the trickier thing because they still need Michigan State to lose a game just to get in the Big Ten championship game. But I just feel like I don't like that the committee put Michigan ahead of them simply based on the fact that head-to-head needs to matter, especially if you're this close, which clearly they are.
Yeah, 100% agree. Otherwise, Arkansas sneaking in, UTSA sneaking in at 23, which is pretty exciting. Their first ranking in program history, and I mean, it wasn't too long ago this was an FCS team, so it's great for them. Wake dropping a little bit after their loss, down to 12. But let's jump over to our six-pack of games. We have a great weekend lined up, a ton of ranked matchups, and we'll start with the Big 12, where we have number 8, Oklahoma. Oklahoma, interestingly enough, too, going back to the college football poll, they were off last week. That's fine, but everyone's, the college football playoff is still like, yeah, we don't know what we have with Oklahoma yet. Yeah, they're winning, but they're not winning convincingly. They're behind a whole bunch of one-loss teams, even though they're in a power conference and undefeated. This will be a big resume boost if they can pull out a win against number 13 Baylor, noon Eastern on Fox. Oklahoma only a 5.5-point favorite here, and to be honest, I haven't loved what I've seen out of Baylor the last couple of weeks. So it's to see them only at 5.5 means that, Vegas doesn't respect Oklahoma, and now there's a college football playoff.
Yeah, Baylor lost last week to TCU. I called that as the upset pick. And
Big
Baylor's
money
been
there. We got
solid
to
this
talk about
year.
that later.
Exactly. Baylor's been solid this year. Everything's ahead of Oklahoma. They have 13 Baylor. They have Iowa State that always challenges them, who still can make the Big 12 championship game. And then they have Oklahoma State, who's currently ranked 10th. And then a rematch against one of those three if they were to win all those games. So Oklahoma will definitely be in the playoff if they win out. There's no question about that. If they lose one, then there's a much bigger argument. But in this game, I'm with you. I think OU wins. I like the matchup for them. I don't particularly think that Baylor's going to be able to keep up with Caleb Williams and this ever-evolving OU team. So I'm with you. I'm not going to bet this game most likely, but if I did, I would give the points and feel like OU shows up, performs well. Now we know their case this season has been they've been close against just about every team, but I think the things are starting to turn and OU will be impressive. The next 2 weeks, I think they're more likely to lose. Out of these last three, this is the one that I think is the easiest matchup for them.
I like Oklahoma in this one, and 5.5 seems like Vegas is begging you to take them, so I might take them. We'll see. Next, we'll move over to the SEC, where Texas A&M, the number 11 team in the country, heads to Hotty Toddy, number 15 Ole Miss. This is the game day game, 7 o'clock Eastern on ESPN. A&M field goal favorite here on the road, and the over under only 55.5. What are we looking at here, Kent?
I think what you're looking at here is an A&M team that knows what they do well, which is they run the football well. Ole Miss has been vulnerable to the run. They're great if it's an obvious passing down. They have one of the best pass rushers in the SEC. They have an explosive offense. But if you can get in second and five, third and three, that's where A&M needs to be. If they're third and seven, third and eight all game, they're not going to beat Ole Miss, barring Ole Miss just turns it over five times on offense. So I like A&M to get in a rhythm here. I think their defense will do a good enough job, maybe holding Ole Miss into the, high 20s, low 30s type of deal. And then the A&M offense will be able to run the ball well, get some play action, move the ball downfield. So I'm going to go with the Gig'em here. I'm going to say that Jimbo Fisher and his staff come up with a creative game plan, get in obvious situations where they can run the football and not feel bad about it. And for Ole Miss, they're still trying to shoot for a New Year's Six type of game. And
Sure.
Matt Corral's very much in that Heisman discussion. So it's a huge opportunity for them. But I'll go with, even though it's in Oxford and it's a game that Ole Miss could easily win, I think it's close, but I'm going to go with A&M here. And remember, if A&M keeps winning and Bama trips up once, A&M could potentially end up in that SEC title game because of that win last week against Auburn. So they're still playing for a lot. So I'll go with A&M to win.
Kent, this is the first two legs of a always loses teaser. I like Oklahoma and the over in this game thus far. But let's keep moving on. As we talked about, Purdue, the Giant Killers, number 19 team in the country, heading to the Horseshoe to face number 4 Ohio State, 3:30 Eastern on ABC. Ohio, big favorites here, but the line doesn't matter when Purdue comes to play a top five team.
Doesn't seem like it. And for Purdue, they have nothing to lose, even though they've now beaten two top five teams and they're ranked in the top 20. If they happen to fall apart and lose 47 to 10, then it's okay, it's Purdue and that happens to Ohio State. They play Ohio State tough. Remember, the last conference game that Ohio State has lost is that Purdue game where Rondell Moore kind of took over his freshman year and beat Urban Meyer and Ohio State. I think this line's about 6 or 7 points too high. I thought it would be closer to 14 or 13 and a half. So I would gladly take the 20 and a half here. I feel pretty good that Purdue keeps it closer than 20 and a half. Ohio State should win this game, but they just have not looked too impressive the last few weeks. CJ Stroud's numbers, they continue to shine, but he's not running the ball when he's given space. Sometimes it gets Ohio State into situations where now they're third and long all the time. And the running game for Ohio State just in general has to get better. Travion Henderson's a home run hitter, so he's capable of bursting through and getting 60 yards on any carry. But there's a lot of carries, the Penn State game and the Nebraska game in particular, where it's negative yards, 1 yard, no gain. And I'm not sure that that will happen all day against Purdue, but this is a pretty good Purdue defense. So I'll say it's closer than the 21 and Purdue loses, but they probably lose by 13 or 14.
Yeah, Ohio State has not been the most exciting or confidence-inducing team. I mean, no one in the top four was last week, but them especially. So I like them to win. I like the non-cover though. Next, we have an unranked game in the college football playoff, but a ranked game in the AP poll. You have number 6 Michigan heading to Beaver Stadium, Penn State, noon Eastern on ABC. Michigan, a 1-point favorite here. This is basically a pick 'em for the number 16 going to an unranked team right now.
I think it makes sense. I think you look at this Michigan team, their biggest test of the year, they lost to Michigan State. And I get they had the big lead. It fell apart. They had some key turnovers that if they were clean football for the last quarter, they win the game. For Penn State, they've already beaten. It is funny that they're not ranked in that they've already beaten Wisconsin on the road. They beat Auburn. Those teams are ranked 17th and 18th. I'm not sure why Penn State's not ranked right next to them and probably ahead of both of those teams. Maybe it's just that that Illinois loss is so bad and unforgiving by the committee that they keep penalizing them for it. I just think that this Penn State team is good enough that they shouldn't lose all the big games on their schedule in terms of the East Division. So whether it's Ohio State, Michigan State, Michigan, and then you couple that with the Iowa game on the road earlier, they're good enough that they should win one of those games at the worst. I think with Clifford, the offense is way better than when he was out. The running game has been okay, but the Penn State defense still has playmakers all over the field, and I expect them to force a couple turnovers against Michigan. I know this isn't a primetime game where you get that whiteout at 7:30 or 8 p.m., but the Penn State crowd is going to show up, and they're going to be ready for this game. I'll say Penn State wins this game, pulls the one-point upset, and gets into the top 20 next week with this big victory over Michigan. And as we know, Harbaugh a lot of times loses these type of games, and I don't believe he's beaten Penn State on the road yet, or if he has, it might have been once. He has struggled against Penn State, and James Franklin and his staff, I think, will have this team ready and get the win.
Okay, we'll see. Kent calling for a Penn State win. Those are few and far between, but he's an objective college football prognosticator. Next, we do have a ranked matchup in number 16, NC State, heading to number 12, Wake Forest. Wake Forest, disappointing loss to UNC. I mean, the amount of points scored in that fourth quarter and just the run that UNC went on must have been dizzying for a Wake Forest fan. All of a sudden, out of nowhere, to lose that game to be down by 10 and end up losing the game by 3 was ugly. NC State, sure, they're still alive or there, something, top 16, I guess. Wake Forest, 2-point favorite here. Sure, I mean, it wasn't a great week last week for them. That was their defense was an absolute sieve.
It was. And look, we know going into that game last week, their defense was not going to be a strength. It was, could they outscore?
If Army can put up 56 on you.
Yeah, Army put up 56. Carolina now went for, you know,
over
close
50.
To 60. Yeah. And they were up 45-27 late in the third quarter. And that's the most bothersome part of that, if you're Wake Forest, is it's not that you lost a shootout. It's that you were up 18 points in a shootout, which generally means you're going to keep scoring a little bit. And even if the other team does, it's not going to matter much. So for Wake Forest's sake, and they might have been due for one of those, it technically wasn't a conference loss. So if they beat NC State this week, they are looking great to punch their ticket into that ACC title game. They still have a matchup with Clemson that will have some significance because Clemson is still hanging around with only two conference losses. But if Wake Forest can win this game, they almost need to treat this week like it's a division-winning game, because if they lose this game to NC State, they're going to be in some trouble because now they'd be behind on the tiebreaker with not a whole lot left. But I think Wake will bounce back. They'll get their ninth win of the season, and we know that they're going to score a good bit. On the other hand, NC State does have one of the better defenses in all of the ACC, so they're going to try to keep this game in the 30s as much as they can. But I think Wake will get over 40 and probably find a way to win. And if they win, they're now looking extremely good to get to Charlotte for that ACC title game.
Yeah, this should be a fun one. And you've already hit your over, so you're just rooting for wins for him now. And then finally, let's go out to the West Coast for the Pac-12. We're number 3 Oregon. Hosts Washington State, 10:30 Eastern, Pac-12 After Dark on ESPN. Oregon, 2-touchdown favorite here, and it's a little bit more foreshadowing. But, Kent, you like Washington State a little bit in this one.
Yeah, I do. I think the Washington State has been pretty good since the whole mishap with the coach having to, you know, technically he got fired, but for all intents and purposes, Rolovich resigned because he knew he was getting fired if he didn't get the vaccine, and he didn't get the vaccine. For Oregon, they have everything to play for going forward. They win out. They are absolutely in the playoff and more than likely would be the 2 seed come selection committee time in December. But Oregon has still kind of, in my mind, been lucky to get to 8-1 so far. They were fortunate to win a couple of their games. I thought that this Oregon Ducks team you know, would have more of a killer instinct in some of their games. They didn't put away UCLA, kept them in it, survived. Cal the same way. Washington State also, if they win this game, they're in really good shape to win that North Division. So if Washington State pulls this upset, they're now very likely going to be playing for a Pac-12 championship in a couple weeks. So they have everything to play for in this game. I'll call the upset. I will. It's 14 points. But I like Wazoo here to go into, which will be a great crowd, late at night at Autzen Stadium in Eugene. And if they win, it might very well be a Washington State and Utah Pac-12 title game in Vegas in a few weeks.
Barf. man, the Pac-12 is in dire.
What do you think?
Do
you think Oregon wins this and covers, or do you think they just find a way to streak through?
I mean, they've shown resolve, but they haven't shown the resolve in blowing out teams. They've shown resolve in finding ways to win, like they did against UCLA. So I don't see them covering, but I do see them finding a way to win and keeping their slim playoff chances alive. Let's move on to our rapid-fire games. In the ACC, North Carolina, after that exciting win and comeback over Wake Forest, heads to number 21 Pitt Thursday night, tonight, 7:30 Eastern on ESPN. This is a fun one for the ACC for a weekday game.
Yeah, Pitt has not beaten North Carolina since they've joined the ACC. They always lose this game, sometimes in horrific fashion. And a couple years ago, it was funny. This game, when played in Pittsburgh, they always play it on Thursday night for some reason. This was the same night a couple years ago. The game was in overtime, the exact same time that the Myles Garrett incident was happening with Mason Rudolph in Cleveland when they played the Steelers. So if you were a fan of the Pitt Panthers and the Pittsburgh Steelers, you were watching those both simultaneous at the same time, where Carolina scored in overtime to win moments, like within moments of Myles Garrett taking off Mason Rudolph's helmet and hitting him with it. So just a crazy night. I like Pitt in this matchup. I feel like if you're going to go with Carolina in this matchup, you have to really think that they're going to force multiple turnovers against Pitt the same way they did last week against Sam Hartman and Wake Forest. I think Kenny Pickett shows up. He's still very much in the Heisman discussion. If he puts together another 500-yard game and four or five touchdowns and is clean football, that's going to mean a lot for him and the Pitt Panthers. And they're playing for everything in their division. They only have one ACC loss. If they win this game, they're in really good shape. You know, after this game, they have Syracuse and trying to remember who else Pitt has on their schedule.
They have Syracuse, Virginia, and
that's it. So if at this point, they would be a Virginia win away from virtually winning the ACC Coastal. So I like Pitt to win. One thing I love in this game, and I've been doing it the last couple weeks, Notre Dame's team total against Carolina was like 34 2 weeks ago. They got into the 40s. Wake Forest team total last week got over. I think their team total was, you know, in the high 30s. That went over early third quarter. Pitt's team total today is only 39.5 against Carolina. I love that. Now, Carolina's team total is only 32.5. That probably goes over as well. I would avoid the line in this game. I might even avoid the over-under and just go all in on that Pitt team total, where if they get 40 points, you're going to win money, and I like them to get that.
Love it. Next, number one, Georgia, headed to Tennessee, 3:30 Eastern on CBS. Georgia, 3-touchdown favorite here. And sure, the Georgia, you know, we put this on the rapid fire because Georgia is really the only team this year that has looked as dominant as their ranking.
That is true. But on top of it, this Tennessee offense is one of the better offenses that they'll face this entire season. When Hendon Hooker has became the quarterback after that Pitt game where they lost and he replaced Joe Milton, they've had one of the best five offenses in the country. So Josh Heupel has done a great job this year. You know, huge win over Kentucky last week. That was a statement win for this program. You know, beating a top 25 team should put Tennessee in good shape to get 7 wins on the season, which would be ahead of schedule. They're going to lose to Georgia almost definitely, but I can see Tennessee putting up 20-plus points in this game. And if they do, that might be enough to cover because, as we know with Georgia, they're not looking to try to score 45. If Georgia gets 35, they're more than happy. So a 35-23 type of win is completely fine. So I'll say that this game might have potential to be a little closer than some of the other Georgia games we've seen in the last couple months.
Next, we have number 9 Notre Dame heading to a plucky Virginia team, 7:30 Eastern on ABC. Notre Dame, just under a touchdown favorite here, 5 points. And Notre Dame really has kind of found their rhythm. I like this team a lot, and I like them to win this game and cover.
Yeah, they've been a lot better the last few weeks since that USC game. The offensive line's been great. They've been running the ball well. Kyren Williams, he's very close now to replacing my favorite Notre Dame player of all time was another number 23 in Golden Tate. But the difference is Kyren Williams is doing it on teams that are actually like winning big games, going to the playoff, getting double-digit wins. So I think Kyren Williams is pretty close to becoming my favorite Notre Dame player I've ever seen. He is just a hard runner, always seems to make guys miss, make that extra play. If it's third and three, he'll get you those 4 yards. And that's been valuable. The Notre Dame defense could really be up for a challenge this week if Brennan Armstrong plays and his ribs hold up. He got hurt against BYU 2 weeks ago. They were off last week. Nobody knows if it's quite broken ribs, bruised ribs, whatever it is. He indicated to the coaches in that game, and I know that you saw this because you bet the over live in that game at what, over 2.8 or what did you bet?
118.
Over 118 and a half. And then the game ended up at like 116 or something. If Armstrong stayed in that game, it would have went over. So nobody knows if he's going to play much. Here's the issue with him. He's a great dual threat guy. Good runner, leads the team in rushing, outstanding passer. Even if he has bruised ribs, how much does Virginia want him running the football with that? Because he's going to get popped, and Notre Dame's going to know this, and they're not going to be afraid to hit him in that area and test them out. So I like Notre Dame to win this game. I would have said with a healthy Armstrong, I might have thought Virginia wins a shootout, but I'll go with the Irish here to win. And if Armstrong is not close to 100%, I think there's a very good likelihood that Notre Dame covers.
I love it. Okay, let's move on to our next game where we have Miami at Florida State.
Used to be a
And
great game.
used to be a great game. Miami, a favorite here, which I guess. I mean, Florida State has shown some life this last month. Miami has also, performed as expected. Miami 2.5 here. What do you like?
Yeah, I think Miami shows up and covers in this game. I don't think Florida State has improved monumentally from where they were, losing to Jacksonville State in week two. But Miami, on the other hand, has gotten better. Tyler Van Dyke has been outstanding the last few weeks. Jalen Knighton at running back's been great. All their freshmen are seemingly stepping up and playing better than what the guys they replaced were doing. So I like the way this Miami team's been playing. They beat a top 20 NC State. They beat a top 20 Pitt. They survived Georgia Tech last week. That was a little disappointing how Miami let Georgia Tech stick around and almost win that game. But in Tallahassee, I think that Florida State will compete in this game. I don't think it's a blowout, but I do like the Canes to win by more than a field goal and get their sixth win. And again, this game used to mean a lot. This was the game on your calendar as a student at Miami every year. You either circled it to say, I will be there at home, or you circled it to say, I'm going up to Tallahassee on this date. And it was a, foregone conclusion. That was your game of the year. That's just not quite the case anymore.
No, I don't think there are many games of the year for either of these teams these last couple of years. It's been a little bit tough down in that state of Florida, and Florida's joined the pack a little bit
How
this
about the
year as well.
combined record now of the three head teams in Florida? Miami's 5-4, Florida's 4-5, and Florida State's 3-6. So
Under
combined,
500
they're
record.
three games under 500. That is really bad.
I mean, you gotta remember, it's been down in Florida for a while. Remember when we thought Kiffin had the best team in Florida with FAU for a time back then when he won 10 games, but not pretty down there. Let's get back out to the West Coast, where number 22, LA Aztecs, San Diego State hosts Nevada in Carson. And Ken, I really still want to get to a game there. I'm not going to do it. I'm due to have a child this Saturday. That takes a little bit of precedence. But I do want to see the San Diego State team because their punter is apparently the second coming of God with this guy. He's had two 80-plus yard punts. He had a punt that went for a touchback from his own 10-yard line. This guy is apparently amazing, and I want to see him live at some point. But that being said, they're 3-point favorites, 10:30 Eastern on CBS Sports Network. And this is another one where a little bit of foreshadowing here. This isn't you don't like the favorite.
Yeah, I don't. I think Nevada's the better team. San Diego State, great defense. Their offense is limited. Yeah, the punter has been like the star of the show week in and week out. Matt Araiza. I mean, I don't know how he doesn't win the Ray Guy Award this year. He already broke the national record for most 60-plus yard punts, and he still has at least 3 games plus a bowl game remaining. Unless he sits out. Maybe he's so good he put his NFL draft tape on and he sits out on the bowl game. But Nevada, I love Carson Strong. They're still very much in the mix to try to win their division and get to the Mountain West Championship game. I'm also kind of intrigued with in December, you have that Jimmy Kimmel LA Bowl out at SoFi this year, and that's going to be what used to be the Vegas Bowl. So it's going to be the MAC champion against, I guess the fifth Pac-12 team. But I wouldn't be against going to that and watching a Mountain West team play a Pac-12 team at like the afternoon on December 18th. But I'll take Carson Strong in Nevada to win this game. They have a really good offense, and in this game in particular, I think the good offense outweighs the good defense, and Nevada wins.
You have been riding Nevada all year, and I don't think you've had great results on it. So I'm going with San Diego
I've
State
had
on this
some hit
one.
and miss. I've gotten them outright on a few upsets, but then I've also missed, when they've lost, I've been on the other side of those for sure.
Or that UNLV game. Or no, that was Fresno. Fresno
Yeah.
UNLV was the one where they just Fresno barely beat them. Okay, let's move on. Fun as hell. We covered it above. Ole Miss at A&M, probably the game of the week.
At home against A&M.
Excuse me, at the Grove. And this one's pretty should be great. Let's go on to the teams we're riding in Kent. Army with one of my favorite watches of last week. I turned it on. It was like 10 a.m. and it was at halftime. And I literally texted you. I was like, I thought it was the end of the first quarter and it was the end of the first half. Game ends up going into overtime, ended up being a normal 3.5, 4 hour game. But really exciting. Air Force found a way to wake up their offense, and Army, their wide receiver had a great game. They had their backup quarterback in there slinging it a little bit. That was a really fun game. Now they get to take on Bucknell, guaranteed win right here. That'll get us to 6 wins and put us half a game out, or excuse me, put us 2 games out for our over under. We got I think we got UConn on the schedule coming up as well, so that should be a dub. So it's exciting to be an Army fan again, and your Wake Forest team finally suffered their first loss after winning 7, 8 straight games to start the season, covering the over outright.
Yeah, overall, it's been a great season for them. And, Wake wants to still battle and win an ACC. But yes, I think for Wake this week, huge game. Most likely will decide the Atlantic Division against NC State. Top 16 game. So that Wake Forest still has everything to play for. I don't think it was realistic to think that they were going to go 13-0 and make the playoff. If they did go 13-0, I think they would have been in. But their defense is so bad, you can't think you keep up every week. And for your Army, you're right near that number. I mean, obviously they're going to win easily. When you play a 1-8 FCS team, you can't lose that game. And as you said, there's still other games on the schedule left that they can close out and maybe get those 9 wins. So we'll see on that front. In terms of best bet, I said it earlier, Pitt's team total tonight. So if you're listening to this Thursday, we're recording this. This should be out early afternoon, East Coast time. Pitt Panthers, they score a lot. Carolina can't stop anybody from scoring. So I like Pitt to get in the 40s and get you that team total.
Yeah, and by the way, it's not a UConn. They already played UConn. They're playing Massachusetts, which is another guaranteed win. Liberty is a tough game on their schedule, and then Navy hopefully is the pushing them over the edge, or at least the push, right there. Finally, let's get to our best bets and upset picks. Kent, UTEP -1. I'm basing this completely on records. They're 5-4 versus a 3-6 UNT team, and I feel like I'm getting value here, so I'm taking them as my best bet. I actually struggled this week with both my best bet and my upset pick. I didn't love the board a ton, so this is my move. And then LSU +2.5 at Arkansas. They had a strong showing against Bama. Arkansas has been up and down this year. I like them. Kent, I'm up $5. You, on the other hand, are up nearly $800 on the season. I actually we save all of our run sheets and scripts. I want to go back the last few years and see how up you are on your upset picks. You have just been you go through these mid-season heaters where you just can't miss. You had a +200 win last week with TCU +6.5, and this week you're throwing all your chips into the middle. And tell me about your upset pick.
Yeah, this week's more of just a potential long shot one. The fact that I've done well on these, and yeah, each year the key with these, I mean, if you can just stay near 500, you can all you need is to win one or two plus 200 plus 300 sort of deals, and you can make a pretty good bit of money. I'm gonna go with Wazoo this week at Oregon. It's 450. I do think pretty confidently if they played this game four times, Washington State at least wins one of those. If they play five times, they absolutely win one of those. So I think it's pretty good odds. And plus 14, the value's out there at plus 450 on the money line. So keep it going. Last week I got the TCU with the interim Jerry Kill to beat Baylor. That was a huge win for them with their awful, red and purple and gray
Oh,
uniforms
those
they
were
wore.
disgusting.
And you got Boston College, and that was a smart bet. I like that bet as well. On Friday night, they did the bandana game. They beat Virginia Tech, who Fuente is another dead man walking. He will not be back at Virginia Tech. How about that? Like, you went to that game week one, and they
I
beat a
know.
top 10 team, and you
Rush the
thought,
field.
man, there's no way that, okay, so I guess this is going to be a competent team. And then you look a month and a half later, 2 months later, and they're just awful. So overall, I think that you gotta think that LSU has a dog in the fight, plus 2.5 for you against Arkansas. And we know what will go on in that game. If Arkansas can get their run game going, they win. If they can't, your upset's looking pretty good.
Yeah, love it. Next, let's get to every game in 60 seconds. Kent, we're trending in the right direction. Single digit losses last week. We went 49-9. We have 57 games this week. We are 499 and 132, looking to break that 500 win rate. I will start us off. Pitt,
The Bearcats,
Boise,
Clemson,
Fighting Holgersons,
K-State,
Penn State,
the Hoosiers,
Badgers,
Gators,
Roll Tide,
War Eagle,
Boomer Sooner,
Mustangs,
My Black Knights of the Hudson,
Syracuse,
Memphis,
the Minutemen,
the Utes,
Hilltoppers,
Chanticleers,
App State,
Texas State,
the U,
Boston College,
Hokies,
Hawkeyes,
Buckeyes,
Louisiana Tech,
Aga,
Cyclones,
Blue Raiders,
the Herd,
Cajuns,
FAU,
top 25 undefeated Roadrunners,
Mizzou,
Sparty,
Rainbow Warriors,
Golden Hurricane,
UTEP,
Red Wolves,
the Beavs,
Sparky,
Kentucky,
Giggum,
Air Force,
My Demon Deacons,
Fresno,
Go Irish,
Go Tigers,
Hook'em Horns,
Pokes,
the Bruins,
Quack Attack,
Utah State.
and Reno. And with our fun as hell team hosting game day and probably as the game of the week, let's let the Rebs take us out. Hotty toddy.